This is a test of the emergency metal broadcast system. If this had been an actual metal emergency, you would have been instructed to don your nearest black t-shirt, throw the horns, and bang your head until the metal emergency had passed. We now return you back to your metal programming.
Hey there, this is Jeff Martin from Blasted to Static, X-Racer X-Guy, Badlands, and a million other bands, and this is Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to another week of Focus on Metal. Judging from the reaction that Richie got about last week's part three of the Little Mountain Sound series, I would say that once again, Richie was on point in his selection of projects for this year. Apparently, even Mike Frazier sent him an email about last week's show. So as I said to several people that have hit me up about it, plenty more good stuff where that one came from. So unless you've been living under a rock, of course, you know the big news this week is that Armored Saint is putting out their brand new album, Win Hands Down. This will be their seventh studio album, of course, out on Metal Blade Records. And the label did something pretty cool in regards to the release of this album. They had put out a very, very cool limited edition box set for everybody over in Europe. But of course, that box set was not available to us here in North America. So due to the demand over here in North America, Metal Blade did something very cool. They actually get a limited number of those box sets over here in North America. And they are available for order from Metal Blade. So that box set includes a couple of cool things. There's, of course, the CD. And then, of course, there's a DVD in there as well, which has the Keep It True Festival from 2009, as well as the production video for Win Hands Down. And then also some other goodies in there. There is some Armored Saint playing cards, some custom poker dollars, and then an Armored Saint game board, which is two-sided with a poster on the back. So if you are here in North America and you want to grab yourselves one of those, you might want to try and check that out very, very quickly. I hear they're going fast. That would be metalblade.com/armoredsaint. And of course, those of you over in Europe, order away. I hear you got plenty of them available to you over there. Also, speaking about Armored Saint and Europe, Armored Saint is just wrapping up their North American tour with Saxon. That was on May 30th. They wrapped that up and they are getting ready to head over to Europe, kicking off their European tour on the 19th of June at Hellfest. There will be a slight interruption in the tour and they head back on July 11th to do a very, very special show in Vegas at the Count's Vamped Rock Bar and Grill, which if you remember with my interview with Paul Shortino, he talked all about that club and the killer, killer sound system available in that club. So that should be an awesome show. If you're out in Vegas on July 11th, want to catch a pretty incredible one-time show, that would be the one to go see. And after that, they hop back over to Europe doing a whole bunch of different stuff. Of course, they're doing Wacken, and they're doing the Bloodstock Festival, the Alcatraz Festival, all kinds of dates. But you can head up to facebook.com/TheArmoredSaint to get all the tour dates and information both on Win Hands Down and what the Saint is doing in regards to all their tour dates. So great to see a new album coming out by these guys. Awesome stuff. I've been enjoying it. I got the preview from Metal Blade. Great stuff. Still waiting for my pre-order for the actual physical one to roll in the mail. I know that'll be coming in any day now. And of course, big deal here on Focus on Metal because, you know, Armored Saint has kind of been the unofficial pet band of Focus on Metal since way back when I was doing the show with Jay. So just let me say it one more time. Do yourself a favor. Go and get yourself the brand new one from Armored Saint. Win Hands Down. So what's on tap for this week? Well, I'll tell you, we got a great interview with the one and only Jeff Martin. Jeff is probably best known for his stint in Racer X as the lead vocalist of that band. But then, of course, the guy's also played drums with MSG. He's done backing vocals on Priest albums. He's played with Dokken. Of course, he played in Badlands for a couple albums. So the guy has been around the scene for a long time, done a lot of great stuff. And now he has a brand new band together with Stu Marshall and Rev Jones. It is called Blasted to Static. I've heard a little bit of it so far, and great stuff. Can't wait to hear some more of it. So this week, we are joined by Jeff Martin, talking all about that project, as well as a little bit of his past history as well. So hopefully a lot of good stuff for you here on Focus on Metal this week. And I thought, let's kick it off with a little bit of Jeff Martin's solo material. Back in 2006, Jeff released an album called The Fool. Kind of hard to find, but a great album if you can get a hold of it. Has lots of great guests on there, including Paul Gilbert and Michael Schenker. So great album if you want to pick that one up. So I thought I'd give you a little taste of solo Jeff Martin. The name of this track is called Evil Eye, and it features Paul Gilbert on guitar. Metalheads, I am super psyched to have on the line with me tonight the one and only Jeff Martin. No, not the Jeff Martin from the Tea Party. Get your heads out of your ass. I'm talking the Jeff Martin. How are we doing tonight, Jeff?
Good. The one that's spelled with a J, not a G. How awesome. You doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Glad to finally get to talk to you. Of course, you know, we're talking about the great new project you got going together called Blasted Ecstatic. And you know,
oh, yeah.
What boggles my mind is that you as a front guy, you must really like the challenging front guy gig. Because, of course, my first exposure to you as a front guy was with Racer X. And you got all this just incredibly talented four guys behind you making it super hard to be a front man.
Oh, man, that was like a five-ring circus, you know. It really hard. I almost had to light my nuts on fire to get noticed up there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And then now you got this new gig fronting this band, and again, you got just this killer cast of players going on behind you, and I looked at that, and I'm thinking, Jesus, Jeff loves a challenge.
Oh, yeah. Why not? Why not? Well, you know, the thing is, I've been saving myself like a little treasure to do more Racer X stuff, but and not too long ago, Bruce Bouillet and I, the guitar player opposite Paul Gilbert in Racer X, he sent me, we met at a NAMM show. He gave me a CD, and there was 40 ideas on there for songs. So I took that thing, got into my studio up here, edited stuff together, and we ended up writing 25 songs, and our evil plan was to send a song a day to Paul until he cracked. during a month's time, if he gets 30 songs, you know, something may break. But, you know, after the fifth song, he just said he wasn't into it right now, and if he ever wants to do metal, he'll give us a call. So, you know, from that point, I just said, you know, this is never going to happen. So I need to get going with somebody else. And really, I haven't done a whole lot of singing other than on Judas Priest album and hadn't done very much lead vocals with anybody else other than Racer X. Just that's why I say saving myself like a little treasure. Obviously been a drummer for UFO and MSG and Badlands and on and on. I'm a little musical whore. So you know, this Blasted to Static came along through Bruce Bouillet, who was doing a lead on Stu's album called Empires of Eden. And Stu wanted me to do, he sent me six songs, wanted me to do six songs. He was going to pay me for it. Started getting work on that, and, you know, it just started enveloping into something else to where, hey, this is not just a solo project thing. Let's call it a real thing. And I just, you know, and I get CDs all the time from guys and really good guitar players and stuff, but the songs just usually aren't there, or they either that or they are there, but I just don't connect to them, you know?
Right.
So I just connected to these. It was really easy to write to them. And we just started sending stuff back and forth. And lo and behold, here we go.
It really is kind of unique. You know, they sent me some demo stuff to listen to. And it's definitely not just off-the-shelf type of stuff. And it's even a little different from what I've heard Stu do in the past as well. So it's pretty cool to see a project like this coming together. But the fact that you're really, you can hear all the roots of the stuff in there, but you guys are trying to reach out and really get somewhere else with this stuff.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's such a good producer on his own that we don't have to go outside the box to get, you know, what he's looking for. He works, you know, little keyboard bits in there and stuff to give it a more symphonic feel here and there. It's definitely got, you know, some of the intros are definitely honing right down the road, Eraser X.
Yeah.
Some of my singing has changed a lot through, you know, having a daughter who's a complete metalhead. She's going to college right now for photojournalism, and she wants to be a rock journalist. And she knows all the new bands, so she got me into Suicide Silence and all these new guys, to where I had to learn how to do a little bit of metalcore and screamo, and you know, so I'm doing a little more of the Painkiller type Halford singing on this, which I kind of enveloped a little more. And actually, it's really easy for me to do. I could probably do that 365 days a year without losing my voice, versus actually singing like somebody in Journey or something. So I'm mixing that up with octaves. You know, we're trying to create more of a wall of sound vocally, not just one voice coming out. You know, for lead vocals, maybe an octave and a higher, you know, screechy bit, and you know, just trying to mix it up a little bit and cover some really cool. You know, I love doing lyrics. I love to live in that world. So, you know, we're covering some pretty cool stuff. So it's going to be neat. And we're not going to toss a million songs down your throat. We're going to hit you with 9 or 10, and that's going to be it. But we both really love Black Sabbath, and I love the Black Sabbath albums that have these little ear cookies in between. You know, maybe just, you know, Tony Iommi doing something goofy on an Echoplex,
right.
You know, and I can't tell you the titles of those right now, but you know, he's always got some cool little acoustic thing just to give your ears a breather from being mashed, you know, and it just makes the rest of the album come together. So we're going to throw that in there too. And
yeah.
You know, Rev's putting together some little ditty, and he's only be like a minute or something, like, but here and there through the album. So we're going to try to make it sound like it all belongs together, you know, and not just here's a bunch of songs sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. You know, that was something that some other people have done recently too. You know, Leta Leoni did that with her last project, and that was something I really liked, was that, for one, it wasn't, you know, 17 songs. It was like 9 or 10 songs. But then she
right.
just put these little interstitial pieces between the songs as well. And you're right. It kind of...
It's a palette. It's a sonic palette cleaner.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
what I'm calling them.
And it just sounds so good when they were doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And half the time you end up, when you're doing something, walking out of the room after listening or out of your car, you're humming those goofy little parts. I mean, man, I wish they'd write a whole song out of that. But, you know, we're trying to toss some of that together, and also doing an acoustic song that's a total, you know, I can't call it a ballad because that just reminds me of sloshy 80s ballads, which I never really, other than Sunlit Nights, I really never had much of a hand in those. Not that kind of guy, but this one's more like an Irish lament, you know, a broken-hearted Irish lament sort of thing. Sounds more like a bit of a funeral march, a la Celtic or
very
something.
Cool.
You know, it's
yeah.
pretty cool. Yeah,
looking forward to hearing that. definitely. Yeah. Right. You know, you talk about the lyrics and getting into lyrics, and definitely, you know, listening to Repossession and Nothing. And I had to listen to that about three times. I'm like, wow, there's just a lot of cool stuff going on here, word wise as well.
Yeah.
I really like that.
And, you know, I'm a huge Dio fan. So, and you know, who isn't? I mean, if you're talking about the greatest, not only the greatest metal, American metal singer of all time. He just is it. I did a tour with him, and he never warms up. He's always on. Where he comes from, tone-wise and sonically, it's just from so many cool places that aren't in the normal metal realm.
Right.
That made him what he is. And he did a lot of counterpoint. He's a good bass player, so he understood notes and counterpoint. You know,
right.
Obviously, if you're gonna sing. Just like you hear chamber music with violins and cellos going on, they're not playing the same notes together. You know, that would sound like kindergarten.
Right.
One, the cello's playing off the violins and stuff, and that's kind of what I did on my solo album a little bit, is I really got into that I ran into a tube screen and a Marshall. But, you know, having that counterpoint stuff vocally and Repossession and Nothing really has that in the chorus. I did a lot of cool... and I had to search for that to, you know, finally you don't hear the car horn, you know, and a car horn, obviously are two notes that are not matching up together. And that's what makes that car horn sound.
Yeah.
So, I did a lot of counterpoint stuff on that song. And, you know, even what the song's about is being, and it's nothing that I've been ever connected to, but I've had friends have what I would call insane girlfriends, and they really were. They were really super depressed, and you know, I've had friends who couldn't take it anymore, dumped them, but had to go save them because, you know, they just were a mess. You know, they couldn't do anything on their own. So that's where I got the Repossession of Nothing. You're repossessing absolutely a complete catastrophe, and why are you doing this to yourself? But there's some good guys out there. But anyway, you know, that's kind of where that comes from. It is this insane human being that you're trying to save.
Mm.
And that's where that kind of comes from.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about counterpoint stuff too, because that definitely is like a hard concept. And for a while, you know, I came up playing, you know, blues and hard rock and all that. And really didn't get exposed a lot to it, but the first roommate that I had was a trumpet player, just like Ronnie played trumpet as well. And
oh yeah,
you know, so he'd be playing stuff, and I'd be like, well, that sounds really cool. You know, like playing like Maynard Ferguson type stuff. And like, what the hell's coming together with that? And then he would explain it to me. And it is just a really hard concept initially when you first get exposed to it. But then, but after a while, it opens up just a big door to make things really cool.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, that's where Cream comes from in bands like that. Mm. When he would go off Jammy Whammy, I mean, Jack Bruce would be playing totally off of Clapton, and they wouldn't be playing the same notes together at all, following each other. You know, obviously, if they're doing, you know, obviously they're playing that part together. But when it comes down to jamming and stuff, and when you only have three guys doing that, it just thickens. It thickens up the soup, you know. You just get all this stuff. So I don't know if you've ever heard any of my solo stuff. I really tried to do it because I'm not good at, how can I say, chords. I'm good at single note stuff. So when I wrote my album, I did it on a bass. And, you know, I hear everything in my head. It used to drive Gilbert crazy because he is such a consummately great musician and understands, like Dio, understands where it's all coming from and where it's going and what's flat, what's sharp. And I would just drive him nuts with my humming. Or I'd grab a bass, you know, like this. Or I'd say, you know, like that Montrose part, you know. And thank God that together we love the same kind of music and we're in a band together called The Electric Fence, which came from tons of old 60s and 70s music. Mm-hmm. So we come from that same fabric. And even on my solo album, which you played on, that's where I would go. You know, I go, well, how about that, you know, the Hendrix bit, the backwards Hendrix bit from Third Stone from Sun. I want you to do that bit in here. And then, you know, we'd speak in that kind of language. And, you know, obviously he wouldn't play the part verbatim, but he would definitely cop the vibe that I was after. Yeah. So, and there again, that album, and I found two violin players and a cellist at my niece's wedding in Wisconsin, of all places, and they did a rendition of Stairway to Hell that was so counterpoint, I had to walk out of the place. I was just in tears. It was so moving, and I said, well, that's what I'm doing. So that's what I did, and I wrote all their parts and ran them through a Marshall and a tube screamer, and so on my solo stuff, there's a lot of counterpoint stuff going on, but you really don't notice it. It just kind of, it sounds like Sabbath meets Zeppelin, if anything. Almost kind of Mellotron-y, you know, like John Paul Jones playing a Mellotron, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So were you tempted at all to do drums on this, or did you just leave all of it to Clay?
Well, oddly enough, I did some drums last night. We have a song that, you know, Stu will just throw me an idea out of the blue with a title. And all so far, I'm a title guy. I have a... in my iPad and written down, I have hundreds and hundreds of titles. Whenever somebody says something, you know, I'll instantly, you know, like I remember Scott Travis going, God, I feel like I'm walking in fucking Dead Man's Shoes, you know, because he's tired and he's hot. You know, oh, Dead Man's Shoes, too. You know, what a great song about some depressed motherfucker who can barely pick up his foot and move to the next spot in the room.
Oh,
that's where that comes from. So, and if I got a title, the song is practically done. I mean, my titles usually carry me through all the lyrics that I need to write in it. You know, once I get that vision of it, I did one last night, and we have an intro to it, and it's the looking up at my iPad here, but what I found I wanted to do, it's called Devil's Preacher. And of course, you know, there's plenty of devil bands out there and all that stuff, and it's not like I'm a born again Christian or anything like that, but I figured I'd take it the other way, about, you know, a preacher preaching to a bunch of people about not listening to the devil, the devil's preacher, you know. What I did is, on the intro of it, I played an organ. We made a real churchy sound organ with a big bash, and the band comes in, changes chords, and each one I do the sermon from Pulp Fiction, where I am the tyranny and you are the Lord, and you know, and it's kind of like a preachy little thing, and it goes into the song, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and you know, we got little bits like that going on. So anyway, you know, obviously, that's a Stu Marshall title that he just threw at me with a couple, you know, bits of music. And now he just sent me another one called The Hammer. And it was only a minute long, minute 12, I think, is what I got in music. But in that minute 12 is a verse, is a chorus, not really a lead section. He can throw that in there. And I loved it. Once again, I loved the title. So I said, what's the scariest fucking thing that could happen to anybody live or almost dead? And that's getting put in a box and feeling and hearing the nails being hammered home at the top of the box, and you're alive and about to be buried alive. And so it's called The Hammer, and it's about going through life and getting older. And getting older ain't that fun. At least with me, I'm fucking sore. And it's just, it's a song about, you know, whoever said that you get better as you get older, you can go fuck himself, because it's kind of a song about that.
That's right.
About,
they you know, lied to
the
us.
The sound of the hammer hitting the box as you're getting older. And that's just, that I just put together in 10 minutes day after yesterday, and I'm going in the studio tomorrow to track all those vocals for that. And that's going to be put on this album, just because he just threw it at me out of the blue, and it's got to get on there. So I don't know if something's getting bumped or whatever, but yeah, this one's pretty cool. So, and it's a real simple one too.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff is got a lot of bits and pieces, but this one's a pretty simple, almost Montrose-y first album. Simple.
Nice.
You know?
You got to have some of those too. And it's also
cool.
You know, and it shows like how long you've been doing this, that if a lesser person got a song from Stu called The Hammer, they'd be thinking, oh, geez, so I got to write a song that's got, like, somehow it involves Stu and, you know, being Stu the Hammer and all that. But you took it in this whole other cool direction.
And that's what I first thought that. Something about a kick-ass guitar player called The Hammer. He's going to drop it on you. You know, that's what I came up with first. But I don't know. You know, I kind of came up with the first line that always was bumping around in my head for such a long time, and that I had to exercise it, you know, get rid of it by writing a song. That's how I do it. Oddly enough, it was a ZZ Top song from back there called Cheap Sunglasses, you know, and the first line, when you wake up in the morning and the lightning hits your head, you know, that line.
Yep.
And that kind of melody line, I said, I always wanted to do something with that. So I kind of used some of them words. I kind of used the melody line, and that was the whole beginning of getting that melody line for that. So, you know, sometimes you gotta come from a little bit of ripoff, Bill, but not really.
Nice. Got to have inspiration somewhere, you know?
Yeah, let's call it inspiration and not ripoff, Bill.
There we go.
Because now when you hear it, you go, oh, what a ripoff, Jim. That is Cheap Sunglasses, that son of a bitch.
Nice, nice. So as far as the band name, I mean, who came up with that? Because it's certainly not a name that initially rolls off the tongue. You know, so when I heard it about, you know, about 2 months ago, I was like, Blasted to Static. And I was kind of like, oh, I'm not digging it. But then after a couple of days, I'm like, that's a pretty freaking cool name.
When you find out the true origin, and that true origin comes from such a real place in a zit-faced little paperboy's metalhead's life, which was mine, here I am, 11 or 12 years old. I got a paper route in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it was the second play. I think it was the Paranoid album had come out. And I had a shitty little cassette player. And, you know, of course, my daughter, who wants to be a rock journalist, is always asking me, Dad, tell me a rock story, you know, because I know shit about, you know, I hung out with Priest through the 80s and me and Rob were best friends. And I got plenty of kooky stories. So I told her about me getting in trouble for, you know, and sometimes you got to deliver the papers on Sunday at 5:30 in the morning. I would be playing, and I, you know, that album, I must have worn out, I don't know how many cassette tapes of that on my cheesy little, and we're talking the cheesiest flat little cassette player from the 70s that you can imagine. You know, those little pieces of shit that have probably didn't even have a bass and treble tone. All it had was a volume knob that was all the way up on 10 all the time
in my
bag with my newspapers. And all it, and I would say I'd just be delivering newspapers, and I had it so loud that it was blasted to static. And so the name of this band comes from the origins of a kid who loved metal so much that he had to have it on 10.
Nice. That's a great story. I mean, not many bands can have that kind of a story behind their name. That's definitely.
Yeah, cool. I wanted it to be, and that's what I think, you know, obviously when Stu heard it, he had the same feeling you had. He goes, well, it's long. And I said, well, no, it's not long, because most bands lately, Falling in Reverse, Suicide Silence, they're all three words. They're three or four letter band names. Mm. And I said, I want a three or four letter band name. I don't want to be the Who or the, you know, what? Well, I wouldn't mind being the Who or having a bank account. But I wanted to, you know, keep semi-current, even though I'm an older, you know, metal musician. And so it was part of that. So I remember Stu trying to cut it down somehow, and I just said, no, if it's going to be cut down, I'm going to want to use it. But mainly, I want to use it because it comes from my beginnings in metal of, you know, zit-faced little metal rocking kid. And I got, you know, they would always call up. I even think people called the paper shack up and go, we can tell that goddamn kid to turn that shit down and blast it to static, for God's sake. So, and it was. It was just, and only I knew what it was playing because, one, I'm closest to it, and two, I played it so much that I just wanted more. I wanted more volume. And but, of course, in those days, those shitty little cassette players didn't give you more. They just blew it. They blasted it to static. So there you go.
All right. Well, that's awesome. So, you know, obviously you've talked about being in and doing a lot of tracking lately and stuff. And so, you know, when do we hopefully get some little product in our hands to revel in?
Well, I'm hoping, Stu just got back from a five-week round-the-world whirlwind tour, just seeing the world. Mm-hmm. And so he's back in the driver's seat mixing all this stuff. Rev's got almost everything done. I only have to sing just a few more songs and this new one, little bobbles and bits. So Stu's going to be mixing the stuff now. Clay has done all his drum parts. So we're hoping, you know, I always like a summer release. So, you know, obviously we're hoping for the end of June. Maybe beginning of July, somewhere in there. And of course, we still haven't gotten a label behind us. So that's what Stu's doing this next week, is getting three good songs. Not, we can't say they're the best. Well, who knows what are the best till you sit down and listen to everything. But, you know, something that shows all the different directions that it's going. And we'll send it off to the Mascot Frontier. Everybody and anybody, and get some people, you know, interested in putting it out properly. If not, we'll put it out ourselves somehow, you know. But I can't see us not getting a deal on this one.
Yeah.
Whatever those deals are now, they're not much, believe me.
No, but, they're not.
You know, we just want to get out there and sell T-shirts like everybody else. That's all we are, is a bunch of glorified T-shirt salesmen anymore.
Oh, man. Yeah, sometimes it's true. I hope you guys do send it over to Rat Pack Records, because Joe and the crew over there, they're definitely dyed-in-the-wool metalheads, and they do a great job with all the artists they have with, you know.
If you're into Racer X initially, you're going to dig it, because let alone my voice is on it. But Stu is doing some wielding, but he's doing it not constantly, you know, he's getting tasty here and there also. So, you know, it's a good blend of everything, I think. So
nice.
You know, all you can hope for, and you know, there's many albums out there, Jethro Tull, Aqualung, there's these albums where every song is just complements the next song, it moves, and you know, the first Montrose album, it's just every song is just unbelievably fantastic, and the whole album, you can't really sit down and play one song, you got to play the whole album, and that's all I'm ever trying to achieve when I'm doing these things, is just to try to make a combined thing that will stand the test of time a little more than just be cheesed out by the next year and what's the next flavor, you know?
Right. I bought the Racer X stuff like the week it came out. Every time one came out, I was, you know, I grabbed it. I was really into Racer X, even to the point that a few years ago on the G3 tour, Bruce Boulay got up with Paul and they played Scarified, and I was like, I lost my friggin' mind.
This is a song by Racer X, and the song is called Scarified.
First time I really realized their magic together, you know, because I was always up on stage with them, so I don't get to see that. But when I was standing down there, and they came through Reno, Nevada, because I live up in Lake Tahoe. Actually, I'm off. We're off to go see Apocalypse. What the hell? Well, who are we going to see, Jamie? Apocalyptica.
Oh yeah, way cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring those guys some. Racer X stuff. I know they're fans. And yeah, we're going to go down to the Knitting Factory and go see those guys in a little bit here. So
nice.
Seeing those guys play together, it just made me realize what magic they had together and how it's hard to fall on that. You know, obviously Paul found him at GIT and he was keeping up with Paul. He says, "Oh man, I'm first scaring the hell out of it with one guitar. Well, really, you know,
right,
scare the shit out of me with two." So and that worked, and some people think that's still the best album just because of Bruce being in there and the leads that they put together, and like Heart of a Lion and Some at Nights and all those dual leads that sound so fantastic. And the main thing is they could pull them live, you know.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to be able to do it in the studio, but all that stuff was pulled live easily by those guys. So
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing, amazing.
And there again, like you said, it's hard to see that. You just scratch your head and go, I wish Paul would see how people really love this, let alone we love it. But, you know, I would love to get back out there. And I know that we could do a House of Blues tour once a year, or just a few tours, just another album every couple of years. And, you know, you don't have to sell the farm and stop everything else that you're doing, but doing one would sure be fun. And I know there's a lot of people who love those songs, and definitely, I mean, at every NAMM show, I am constantly stopped by guys in Avenged Sevenfold and Jackie from Falling in Reverse, which I'll see in 6 weeks. We've become good friends. He actually may do a lead on this album.
Nice.
We'll see. Russ Parrish has already done a lead on this album.
Oh, that's cool.
He's the guitar player in Steel Panther.
Yeah, of course, I always like to think of him as the guitar player in Fight, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, I hand-delivered him to I got in my now wife's truck, the girlfriend then, and we drove from L.A. I drove him to Phoenix, right to Halford's house, and I said, here's your guy. And at that time, Russ was only like 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah.
Little kid, they could just wheel like a son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he did a great job on all those Fight albums. They're fantastic.
Oh, you want to see something crazy? Go go on. Any of you out there want to see Russ and how scary he really was. I think he was 17. After Racer X, I put a band together with him, but Mike Barney hooked me up with him. And we did a show at the Troubadour. And you can go on Facebook or YouTube. You can find it on YouTube, Jeff Martin Troubadour with a band called Bad Dog. And the bass player was actually a guitar player, but he decided to play bass for this. The drummer was a scary guy. And the lead solo in this will just blow your mind. It's just un-friggin' believable. But, you know, right not too soon after that, I got it. You know, I tried to get signed with Atlantic. They gave me some money to do some demos and then backed out. You know, the same story with those boneheads. I've never had any luck with labels back then, especially in Racer X. But, yeah, so that stuff was really cool. And like I said, you can check that out.
Nice. Right after this, I'm going to YouTube. I'm looking that up, so.
And it's the whole show. You know, somebody videotaped it and it got on there somehow, it's the entire show. So
nice.
But not soon after that, you know, through not being able to get it signed, I had an offer to try out for Badlands as a drummer. And at that time, Russ and I were playing with Paul in a band called The Electric Fence at MI. And we learned like 140 old, you know, songs from the 60s and 70s, and we said they were all ours, and we had this whole skit, and that's, who knows, that's maybe the beginnings of all the Booty Quakes and the Steel Panthers and all the crazy bands that Russ has put together, and he's making more money than anybody doing that. Fantastic stuff. X-rated, but fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I ended up getting with Badlands and Atlantic Records, so.
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously, Badlands, I mean, the Voodoo Highway album, first time I put that on, it was like, holy crap, just unbelievable. Just right from the first note of that album was just unbelievable.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, I tried out for that, but, you know, Ray was gone for the week that I tried out for Badlands. And here I did all this work learning the first album because I figured they'd want to try me out to see if I could play any of that crap, and I didn't play one song till, you know, 7 days later. All we did was work on Voodoo Highway songs, which would become Voodoo Highway songs. They just wanted to see what I would come up with. And that's meant more to Jake than whether or not I could play the old stuff.
Sure.
And the amazing thing about Ray was I didn't meet him for those 5 days. And there was a new song, I think it was Soul Stealer, that Jake came up with in the studio, so I knew Ray didn't hear it. And I remember Ray bounding through the door on the fifth day. He's got this dirty white leather jacket on and that charismatic smile of his, and he just starts singing the motherfuck out of the song. I'm telling you, verses, choruses, all the words, done deal. And I you know, song stopped, I shook his hand, he met me, and you know, we had a little blah blah session, and I said, "Geez, when did they send you that song?" And he goes, "Well, no, I do this thing called Jibba Jab, and first stuff I come up with is the best stuff." So he puts a word on the top and the bottom of a line, but everything else is just vowels. And this stuff was all off the top of his head, just walking right in the studio. Just, you know, that and the shit he did on Dusk, half of that wasn't even lyrics. And you wouldn't even know, you know. Just amazing, amazing musician.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely a loss with him. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, another thing people are going to be wondering about with Blasted is going to be, see, now I'm already shortening the name on you, is as far as live
dates.
Well,
you know what, that is cool, and that's what Stu has been calling it, too, and it's so cool just to call it Blasted, because you know what it means. You're blasting yourself with the love of metal, you know? And, you know, that, at least that's where it comes from, obviously, from my story. So, you know, I can even hear that in a crowd. If we'd ever get big enough, everybody go, blast, blast, blast. You know, it's easy to say, and I'm down.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a good end of the set thing. You know, you've been blasted.
Right.
Just crank into one more. So,
there you go.
So maybe some live dates end of this year, into next year? Or?
Yeah, we're looking at 2016. I was supposed to be hold on one second. Let me reset this here. I gotta pull this away from my ear. Can you still hear me?
Yep, absolutely.
There, okay. Yeah, Mike, the bass player that's in Stu's other band, was going to be the bass player of this.
Hmm.
And they were going to be doing some dates, they being the Death Dealer date in Australia. So all they were going to do is fly me down, and he'd already have the drummer there and the bass player, and we were going to do some dates, but not at Rev's involved. It's called two very expensive, you know, tickets to get us down there. So don't know if that'll happen. And that's like in the beginning of September. Mm. So I'm just thinking that we'll get our own tour going, most likely in 2016, if not by the end of this year. It all depends what the label we get and how much dough they want to throw at us and to get this thing moving. Because obviously that's what labels are for. So
right, yeah, awesome. And hopefully you guys are going to make your way through the Boston area, because it'd be great to go out and see you guys and have a beer with you, and certainly would love to hear the stuff live.
Yeah, then I can tell you the real juicy stories. I don't want to waste them all here. that way you'll have me back, because God knows I got a pass on them.
I would love to have you back. You know, we've done a lot of we do like these career retrospective things with folks. We've had Ty Tabor on, and a few other folks we've had on, and kind of go through their career and shoot the crap and have a great time. So, I mean, you're definitely a guy that we'd love to have on to do that.
Yeah, with Ty, you get all that crazy stuff when they were playing in an Evangelist tent, you know, and that's where they got their beginnings to their stuff.
Yeah.
It comes from a real crazy place, but that angelic sort of feel is kind of what King's X had always had. Mm. You know, and that's probably where that came from.
Yeah, it's definitely a different vibe from everybody else, but just very cool. And it seems to be, no matter what else those guys do, that seems to show up in what they do everywhere. So it's pretty cool. So as far as online presence, I know you guys have your main website, blastedtostatic.com, and also facebook.com/blastedtostatic. What about anyone who just wants to actually reach you? Where should they go?
Boy, you know, I have stayed underground. Kinda, you know, you can go to racerx.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can, you know, say a howdy or ask me questions. You can definitely go to Facebook. I'm always talking to people on Facebook. You know, I have this thing where I don't friend everybody, just because it just turns into this nightmare of people showing me their new dog, and I have no idea who these people are, and it just makes me feel like my mind is slipping even more. So I try to stay away from that, but I do answer questions on there all the time. And you know, sometimes if we hook up, we become friends, and you know, you never know.
Awesome. All right. Really happy we finally got able to do this, and I'm absolutely looking forward to this coming out. Having a little taste of the stuff from the PR company is just really like, oh, man, you know, and knowing that that's just the demo, and, you know, knowing the stuff that Stu's put out before with Death Dealer and stuff and how that sounded is really
right.
Got me psyched to hear the whole finished product and have that CD in my hand and be able to pop it in the car and crank it. And I'm an album guy, so, you know, it's a listen from front to back, probably over and over again for 4 or 5 days. That seems to be my MO. Till I know every bit of it, and my kids are like, Dad, stop. You got to change the CD. You're driving us crazy.
Yeah, please. You're killing me. How much is this going to cost me? No, I hear you, and I'm that way, too. You know, I was a big big Stone Temple Pilots fan. You know, they're kind of a mix of my two favorite bands, which, you know, are two of my favorite bands, which was Zeppelin and the Beatles. And I always like their fifth album. I almost had to get it surgically removed from my head. It was just I couldn't stop playing that album constantly. And that's kind of fun, running into those every now and then, you know, where you get an album that just moves you that much that you just gotta hear it again and again.
Yeah.
And you know, and the rest don't come along all that much, you know. It's kind of neat when they do. And I'm just going through my CDs now, so I like to give swag to fans, and then they give me a free T-shirt. Since I'm headed over there, I figure I'll grab a couple things and see what happens.
Yeah, awesome.
So anyway, yeah.
It's been good to talk to you, Jeff. I would absolutely love to have you come back on and enjoy your night out tonight at Apocalyptica. I'm sure you're going to hear some cool counterpoint going on there.
Yeah. I wish those were the guys. I don't know if you've heard that version of Technical Difficulties with the two cellists, but they just nail the damn thing. It's got a really high-end kind of video about helicopters or something, but they're playing. This is it's on YouTube, but check that out. I mean, those guys just wheeled on that, I've always been into those, that end of the music with cellos, violins, but I love them when they get electrified and kind of overdriven.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing it. All right,
okay,
man.
I'm down the road.
All right. Well, nice talking to you. And like I said, have a good night. And hopefully I'll talk to you again soon, Jeff.
Okay, take care.
Later, man.
We'll talk to you after the album's out.
Awesome.
There you go. My talk with Blasted the Static frontman, Jeff Martin. So I know you're probably wondering why I didn't play any Blasted the Static stuff on the show today. And the reason for that is because all that I have from them so far is demo stuff, not really stuff that's been released for public consumption. Guarantee if I had an actual released Blasted the Static track, I would be playing it for you. But believe me, the stuff that I've heard so far sounds awesome. So how about in lieu of that, I throw you down a little bit more solo Jeff Martin stuff from his solo album, The Fool. This one's called Eat My Money. Is a wrap for another week here on Focus on Metal. Hope everybody enjoyed my chat with the one and only Jeff Martin. And I am definitely looking forward to having Jeff come back on and talk about his whole history in the music business. And if you're interested in hearing some more with Jeff Martin, like right now, you can go to the Double Stop podcast. And on episode 28, Brian did a great interview with Jeff. I will say that Richie did make a heroic effort to try to get down to the studio and record a bit of discussion with me this week, but he's a busy guy. The new baby is definitely taking up a lot of his time, but he did try to make it down here. just at the last minute, wasn't able to pull it off. Hopefully he will be able to make it down to the studio before the next show, because I know he's got plenty that he wants to talk about, and I know that everybody out there is interested in what Richie has to say. In the meantime, if you want to talk with Richie, you could go on to Facebook on the Focus on Metal page, and of course Richie's the guy manning that page for us now, and you can reach out to him there. And while you're out there surfing around the net, you can also go to focusonmetal.net, which is our main website, as well as our news blog, focusonmetal.blogspot.com. And of course, we urge you to follow us on Twitter. And just a reminder, haven't said it in a while, but we are available on iTunes. And if you're interested in getting your weekly dose of Focus on Metal in that fashion, then do us a favor, subscribe to us on iTunes, and maybe even leave a comment. And also, as I mentioned, head over to metalblade.com/armoredsaint and order yourself up the brand new Armored Saint release, Win Hands Down. I know Richie is working to try to get something scheduled with Joey Vera to come on the show, talk about the new album, the tour, all the good stuff happening with Armored Saint these days. So hopefully they'll be able to pull that together and get that in the schedule. I know that I personally would be so psyched to be doing that. So as I said, that is a wrap for this week. So for Richie, myself, and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, just want to say, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk with you again, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.